other franchises. Rave founded Explorati to bring his vision to reality, and he staffed it with a handful of people. With a small amount of seed funding, the Explorati tribe worked on the technical problems while Ray went out to raise more capital. As investor money came in, Ray hired artists, more programmers, and system designers, including some highly talented and respected professionals, eventually numbering 21. Some worked virtually from across the United States, and others in the Explorati office. The tribe working on the system didn't all share Ray's zeal for the idea. "I'm not sure this level of interactive gameplay is possible," his VP of engineering admitted, after reading technical papers on the problem and seeing the details of the founders' plans. Ray's response became, "You just have to believe." "I'm not sure I do believe," became the buzz in the hallways and over virtual chats. The tribe soon split, with half wanting to have the power to make key decisions and have others fall in line, and the other half wanting to make them through consensus. This tribal dynamic distracted people from the strategy. As the buzz inside the company declined, it became harder to make real progress on the core technology and on the soap opera world that was under contract. In the wake of the dot-com implosion, raising money was getting harder, especially for early-stage companies. Although business development efforts were going well, everything else was feeling more fragile every day. All the stress landed on Ray. He worked to prop up morale with impassioned speeches. He emailed and phoned investors as he continued to chase new money. Even his home wasn't a refuge. He was married to one of Explorati's writers, and they had taken out a second and third mortgage to finance their dream. From a leadership perspective, there's a lot to admire about Ray. He put it all on the line for his dream. He led with passion bordering on charisma. As with his game system, he found a way to improvise when the funding didn't come through, often putting in more of his own money. Technical note. Most strategies are based on an understanding of the external environment, not the highest aspirations of the tribe. As a result, even the best plans often fail because people aren't giving it their all. Yet, even with these advantages, Explorati ran out of cash and morale at about the same time. Right after 9/11 caused the cancellation of the projects that were signed and dried up the last of the high-tech investor money. With no paying customers and investment money impossible to find, even for stable companies, Explorati disbanded. Ray hoped to come back to the problem and make his dream a reality. Coaching tip. If a strategy fails, see what else, if anything, the tribe wants to do. Tribal relationships often survive the death of a strategy, even a company. Although it's common for people to be at stage two in the wake of the failure, many tribal leaders in our study rebuild the tribal relationships and a new strategy at the same time, finding success the second, third, or fourth time. Ray's story is more the norm than the exception. Leaders seek the perfect strategy to excite employees and stock prices and to make history. This dream is as elusive as the hole-in-one, but that doesn't deter thousands of entrepreneurs from putting it all on the line, or large companies from spending an annual $10 billion on the top 10 strategy consulting firms. As a very generous estimate, strategies fail 70% of the time, according to a 1999 study by Martin Corby and Yarmouto Corby. The problem doesn't play favorites. Very few companies manage to sustain high strategic performance over time. Most entrepreneurs end up like Ray, although most lack his passion, tenacity, and sheer intelligence. This chapter shows how tribal leaders can do it better, leveraging off the collaboration and innovation of Stage 4 to set strategies that people want to implement and that are implementable, The result is an approach to strategy that is new and almost embarrassingly simple. Technical note. As with all the facets of stage 4 behavior, we learned by watching tribal leaders. In this case, however, we also were guided by a colleague who suggested that corporate tribes could learn from military tribes, so we began looking for military models that captured what we observed. The model we present in this chapter, which describes how many tribal leaders set strategy naturally, is a combination of strategy from applied economics, the basis of how the subject is taught in business schools, and military strategy, especially Carl von Clausewitz's On War and Robert Leonard's The Art of Maneuver, Maneuver Warfare Theory and Airland Battle. The essence of tribal strategy. People questioned improvisational computing, and Ray defended the vision. The result was a missed opportunity to refine the tribe's strategy. Just as important, people felt themselves to be the victims of inaction, and they were now solidly at stage 2. My life sucks. Even if Ray had been right, he still would have lost, since only a stage 4 culture could implement such an ambitious plan. Throughout the history of tribes, most failed strategists weren't like today's entrepreneurs, who pick themselves up and try again. The edgier days of ancient history would have seen the person killed, as when the tribe of the Roman Senate took care of their upstart Julius Caesar, whom they believed wasn't listening to them. The more general the tribal leader was in taking things into account, the greater his chance of succeeding. It's no wonder that general and strategy have been linked for thousands of years, with strategos coming to mean the art of the general. The history of successful tribes is the history of leaders learning to take the right things into account, which is what successful military generals do. One might say that the history of tribes gives us a compelling history of strategy. This tribal wisdom on strategy has been lost, and the result is lots of bright, ambitious people putting it all on the line and failing when they don't have to. Technical note. Strategy, the way it's taught in business schools, is largely an outgrowth of research by Michael Porter and Peter Drucker. Taken together, their approach has proven extremely valuable and has fueled worldwide economic expansion for decades. However, we should consider that decades of research pales against the thousands of years of data from tribes and armies. So this chapter is an integration of traditional business strategy with what tribes have learned since the dawn of writing. The Explorati tribe was split between people wanting to do it their own way, and management pushing them to focus on the company strategy, making them ticked off and passive, stage 2, and those who bought into the vision, stages 3 and 4. Taking this into account would have meant stopping the action and dealing with the problem. A similar situation happened at a public utility. The company was moving away from its 100-year history of providing a staple product and toward niche products with much higher margins. As part of the restructuring effort, an executive announced that the company would no longer consider itself a family. That company had been built on the idea of family. It was common for a father to help get his son hired, who in turn would encourage his daughter to apply for work there. It was safe and stable, and people felt they were with their family from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. The executive's remarks to this day are a stake in the heart of employees. That executive failed to take the tribes in that company into account, their history, values, and identity. The employees simply crossed their arms and waited for him to fail, solidly entrenched in a condition of stage 2 ineffectiveness. It wasn't long before he left. The tribe is always more powerful than an individual, no matter what title is on his business card. Tribal leaders need a way of setting strategy that takes everything into account, especially the tribe itself, along with product lifecycle, economics, technology advances, and market demographics. Such an approach might have saved Ray's company and the job of that utility executive. More important, it would have helped upgrade these tribes to the next level rather than eroding them to stage two. The five components of tribal strategy. When we collected the best practices we observed from tribal leaders and combined them with the results from a careful study of historical tribes, we came to a model which has five parts: values, noble cause, outcomes, assets, and behaviors. Values and noble cause. Setting a strategy starts with recognizing the values of people who will implement it, and the noble cause to which they aspire. As we heard in Chapter 9, these pieces give the tribe a boost in motivation and align it on a common purpose. They go a long way to owning Stage 4. Coaching tip. Point to the tangible benefits of shared values and a noble cause. Right away, the tribal leader may have a problem. The mention of values and a noble cause often sends eyes rolling, especially if the tribe has a dominant culture below stage 3. These aspects of strategy are vital to inspiring people to put their all into work. We encourage people to remember the level of motivation the dot-coms had, with people often working 20-hour days, fueled only by Twinkies and power naps. Such is the energy of basing a strategy on the core values and noble cause of the tribe. Unfortunately, the dot-coms ignored most of the other aspects of strategy, such as markets, assets, revenue, and profitability, which is why so many Ferraris were repossessed in the early 2000s. Explorati's noble cause was a world of play and interconnection for everyone. People inside the company got excited about creating their own worlds, such as Star Trek, a sign that the noble cause was in line with tribal aspirations. Their core values were integrity, open communication, and fun. The key to identifying these first two aspects of strategy is for the tribal leader to engage others in a questioning process about what the tribe stands for, values, and what it lives for, noble cause. This is not the time for an executive off-site retreat with a consultant, followed by 18 holes of golf. This is the time to engage in the values discovery process described in Chapter 9, with as many people as possible. Once the tribe has owned its values and noble cause, the tribal leader moves on to setting specific outcomes. Outcomes. Success in the moment. Once values and a noble cause are set, tribal strategy involves three conversations. The first is what we want, or outcomes. The second is what we have, or assets. The third is what we will do, or behaviors. Many strategies go sideways by having two or even all three conversations at the same time, or skipping one of them completely. It's imperative that the tribal leader keep these three discussions separate. Explorati's original outcome was, we will have created a playable proof-of-concept demonstration that uses improvisational computing by July 2001. This outcome is simple, clear, and in line with the tribe's values and noble cause. Note that any objections about whether this is achievable or not belong in a different discussion. Outcomes versus goals. An outcome is different from a goal in one important way. Runner Carl Lewis showed this when he used to say that he ran while others raced. He described the race as already won before it started, and he then sought to fully experience each step of his unfolding victory. This is an outcome. A goal is off in the future, so to some people it implies a failure in the present. When we achieve the goal, we will have stopped failing, is how many people relate to the goal-setting process. Many companies turn themselves around by setting goals to resolve a burning strategic problem, such as a pending bankruptcy, and it often works. Just as often, the tribe falls back into a crisis just a few months later. People are motivated by the goals in a crisis, but they lose their drive once the fire is out. Goals, when set this way, have diminishing returns as people become unwilling to spend their careers in a state of failure, scratching toward success. The unintended consequence of goal setting is often crisis management and adrenaline-inspired bursts of activity, followed by periods of letdown and burnout. It is unsustainable, and it does long-term damage to the tribe. An outcome, by contrast, is a present state of success that morphs into an even bigger victory over time. The difference is the contrast between, "I hope we make it, it'll be great when we turn this around," setting a goal, and, "We have already succeeded, and this is how it looks at this point in the process," succeeding now with an outcome. The latter is much more in line with stage 4. The former often unwittingly creates a stage 2 culture. My life sucks because we're failing. Technical note. A surprising number of tribal leaders in our study learn their most important leadership lessons in the military. Gordon Binder, for example, the former CEO of Amgen, credits his time in the Navy with learning the importance of values and vision. As he told us, "If you walk on board a ship and the brass is polished, the guns will shoot straight. Walk on a ship where the brass is dirty, and that's a ship where we have to check the guns." Stage 4 cultures tend to express their values in both big things, guns, and little things, brass. Keeping outcomes at stage 4. During the outcomes phase of strategy, people will often reveal which cultural stage they are in. The tribal leader needs to be highly attuned to this dynamic, knowing when to intervene and when to call a halt to the process. The objective is for the tribe, not just the leader, to set outcomes so compelling that people will want to form and maintain a stage 4 culture to accomplish them. A strong outcome will inspire the best in people and raise the dialogue above tribal politics. People operating at stages 2 and 3 are often so immersed in politics that the outcome doesn't get enough attention. A hallmark of stage 2 is the avoidance of ever being on the hook for anything, so people at this level will often suggest outcomes like increase quality. Again and again, we saw tribal leaders pushing back. Outcomes must be measurable, with a deadline. How much and by when, was the response we heard from tribal leaders when people suggested vague targets. Some will offer sarcastic suggestions, and then snicker, such as one person in a meeting we observed who said, "Buy a lottery ticket and win by August." The tribal leader needs to stay focused on tribal values and noble cause. "Any real suggestions?" was the leader's quick comeback. It's key to know when to push a tribe and when to back off and upgrade the tribal culture first. We are often asked, "What do I do when no one will say anything in a meeting to set strategy?" The tribal leader's first suspicion should be that the tribe probably has a large stage 2 contingent. Tribal strategy, as opposed to personal strategy, begins at stage 4, and people can hear it and join in only if they are at stages 3, 4, or 5. So, in the case of a dominant stage 2 culture, start by upgrading the tribe before going any further. You might refer back to the coaching tips in Chapter 5. People operating at stage 3 will engage and argue for their suggestion. It will be measurable, and if you look closely, they will have to be in charge for that outcome to succeed. Again, this tactic is an attempt, perhaps unseen even by the person making the suggestion, to divide the tribe. The goal is not to take on stage 3 behavior. Remember that people at this stage are often blind to the full effects of their behavior, but rather to look for what is valuable in the suggestion. Every comment is an addition, but not all additions are equal. The tribe determines the merit of candidate outcomes, which ones survive and which fall away. Here, the tribal leader must look for tribal will, not argue people into her point of view. We saw this dynamic several years ago in working with a mid-sized software company. The CEO dominated the first hour of the strategy session by yelling his opinions and ridiculing other people's suggestions. Classic stage 3 behavior, causing the tribe to divide into factions. He stepped outside to take a call. After a pause, one of the vice presidents said, "We're letting him push us into a strategy we know won't work." One person agreed, then another, and another. In that moment, the tribe began to form an early stage 4 culture, powerful but fragile. When the CEO came back in, the room fell silent. The first vice president to speak minutes before choked hard and said, "It's time we told the truth," and summarized the conversation that had just happened. To his credit, the CEO smiled and said, "Thank you for telling me the truth. Finally. I was starting to think I had hired a bunch of weaklings, and now I'm proud to work here." The room filled with relieved laughter. The vice president had emerged as a tribal leader and set the stage for a great strategy session. And the CEO, to his credit, began thinking about why his behavior had created a stage 2 culture. It was his first step in the epiphany. The company implemented the strategy it set that day and saw a dramatic jump in its productivity. Years later, at the CEO's retirement party, people still talked of that day and of the guts it took for that vice president to speak for the tribe. He is now the CEO, a common career path for tribal leaders. Nor is it necessary to be the one with the loudest voice. In the 18th century, delegates at the Continental Congress said that George Washington was the quietest man in the room and the best listener. He was looking for the emergence of outcomes that the tribe would own, and he came to see that independence from Great Britain was the will of the group. By becoming an advocate for what the tribe wanted to do, but hadn't clearly articulated, he became its leader. Again and again, in our research, we saw specific ideas inspire people and the conversation kept returning to these suggestions. This is a sign that those candidate outcomes are in line with the tribe's core values and noble cause. For a tribe of employees from the company's construction division, the outcome was to build research facilities that were flexible enough to turn on a dime overnight to accommodate clinical breakthroughs as they happened. This construction group, far down from the boardroom, had found its way to further the Amgen noble cause of renewing life. Once the tribe is excited by one or more outcomes, it's time to turn to the next phase of strategy. Assets. The potential for continued greatness. After identifying values and setting preliminary outcomes, the tribe should turn to identifying assets in a conversation focused on what do we have? An asset is anything the tribe and its people have right now and includes equipment, technology, land, relationships, goodwill, brand, public awareness, reputation, culture, and drive. The classic blunder in identification is considering only physical assets but ignoring people's education, passions, and interpersonal networks. During this conversation, the tribe must look itself in the mirror and say what it has now, not what it had, will have, or wish it had. It should find all assets that are appropriate to the outcomes. Explorati had some to die for assets, including some of the best gaming talent in the industry. When Ray led the assets discussion, it was an upbeat meeting. People started piling on asset after asset, and it was hard to record them as fast as they were sent zinging around the room. Quickly, though, the conversation turned to, "We don't have enough money." This is not an asset conversation. Once again, the tribal leader needs to keep the group focused. The assets conversation is only, "What do we have?" There are two special types of assets that the leader needs to make sure the tribe considers. The first are core assets, which we define as assets so central to the tribe that they may be invisible to people inside. The American soldiers in the Revolutionary War had learned guerrilla tactics from the Native Americans, and this asset helped to win the most important battles. At first, though, these tactics were seen as ungentlemanly. Similarly, in our day, tribes within Apple have sometimes not considered the cult-like support from core users, seeing the constant email and calls as borderline guerrilla harassment. But by taking it into account, the entire company leveraged itself to profitability, making die-hard Appleheads the network that spread the word about the iPod. This is Apple, leveraging its built-in tribal asset of true believers. Former Apple executive Kathy Calcidisi said, "At an opening of an Apple store, there was a crowd around the block chanting, 'Apple, Apple, Apple.' That is when I drank the Kool-Aid." One of the major unexploited core assets in most companies is the resources inside each and every person's network. While some at Explorati did not like to work in a virtual company, the situation actually created space for employees to become part of more tribes than they would in a traditional building. This increased the resources available to the company through these networks. However, the employees will do so only if they are fully aligned with the values, noble cause, and strategy of the tribe, as they were in the early days of Explorati. These issues have never been more relevant, with virtual teams now affecting millions of employees. We suggest that tribal leaders ask the question, "What do we have a knack for doing better than anyone else?" This question will often reveal core assets. Coaching tip: ask outsiders what your tribe's core assets are. Since core assets almost by definition are hard to see, outsiders can often see them more easily. Tribal leaders often bring in outside experts for their perspective, not just as experts but as people with a different perspective. The second special type of asset, almost always ignored, is critical to strategic success: common ground. It answers the question, how are we seen by those with whom we want to transact? If the tribe and the audience see the same thing, common ground exists. It's important to establish common ground, or the lack of it, with customers, vendors, and the larger organization. If it is lacking, the tribe needs to take this strategic situation into account, and fast. Here, Explorati had a challenge. They were seen as odd gaming people by many advertisers. They were trying to take online gaming to the masses, which alienated them from hardcore gamers. Looking back, Ray admits he was trying to do too much on too small a budget. You can't evangelize a new idea for non-gamers and sell a specific game contract to a specific game publisher at the same time. A focus on common ground would have revealed that problem sooner and given Explorati a larger potential customer base, which might have given them more options when their primary contract was canceled. It's easy to see how common ground works when we look at entire companies. as long as we tie the lesson back to tribes. Microsoft saw itself as unlocking people's potential through technology, while many corporate customers, developers, and consumers were worried about what they saw as predatory behavior. This lack of common ground continued to slip, and the anger festered, until the company was labeled as a greedy, unfair monopoly. Walmart is boycotted in some middle American neighborhoods because they see it as a destroyer of Main Street economies. While the company sees itself as giving the consumer an edge in price and selection. For corporate tribes, lack of common ground has four predictable results: being ignored by the market, boycotts, legislation and regulations, and lawsuits. To test whether your tribe has common ground, ask outside stakeholders, especially customers or external executives, how they view it. One of the most famous strategic blunders in history rested on a tribe not having common ground with its parent company. This was Xerox PARC, which had invented a revolutionary type of graphical interface using a mouse and desktop. Today, that invention is at work in every computer running Windows and on every Macintosh. The upstart R&D tribe saw its members as developing the future of technology, while corporate leaders looked at them as out-of-touch nerds who were wasting money. Xerox ignored its own tribe's work, so they opened their doors to anyone who wanted to see their invention. A young entrepreneur from Silicon Valley saw the value in their technology, though, and immediately called all the members of his tribe. That person was Steve Jobs, and the tribe he brought in to see this amazing advance was the R&D group at Apple. Jobs got the technological breakthroughs of the decade in exchange for a few shares of Apple stock. In summary, the assets discussion needs to take all the assets of the tribe into account, including the core assets and whether it has common ground with outside stakeholders. The tribe should also consider the cultural stage of the tribe and people's commitment to core values as assets, since these are the fuel that will drive extraordinary performance over the long run. Test question 1. Enough assets for the outcomes? Before a strategy can be successfully implemented, the tribe must answer yes to three critical questions. Until that happens, the strategy is unfinished. The tribe can't be sure it will work, and just as important, people won't have the confidence required to take a strategy to success. The first question is whether the tribe has enough assets to accomplish the outcomes. There is nothing wrong with answering no, as long as the tribe then deals with the consequences. In fact, the answer is no for most corporate strategies in the first round of planning meetings. It's the same in the military, when the answer is almost always no when a war begins. The United States didn't have enough naval assets in the Pacific Theater after Pearl Harbor, or military assets in the Middle East immediately after 9/11 for the strategy to invade Afghanistan. In the case of Explorati, we've come to the fork in the road. The answer to the first question was clearly a no. The tribe lacked technology, money, and common ground with most advertisers and game publishers. Could the company have made it anyway? It could if things went well, and Ray describes how things almost clicked, including being ultra-shortlisted for the Lord of the Rings game. The problem with under-resourced ventures of any kind, from military operations to runs for political offices to startup businesses, is that things do not usually go well. While history has some examples of inventors who went for their dreams without enough resources and eventually made it work, the same history has many more examples of people not making it and having a reasonable explanation for why it didn't work. A downturn in the economy, changing customer tastes, or a competitor who seemed to appear out of nowhere. Our model encompasses 10,000 years of tribal wisdom, that says it's not smart to proceed as if things will go as planned. As Field Marshal Helmut von Moltke said, no battle plan survives contact with the enemy. If all limitations are not taken into account, stopping the action and confronting the problem, eventual failure becomes likely. In the event the answer to this first test question is a no, the strategic discussion changes to how do we build our assets? This new focus then takes the place of the desired final outcomes as an interim outcome. At this point, the new interim outcome is to accumulate appropriate assets or common ground until the first test question becomes yes. When this happens, the strategy shifts back to the original outcomes. Regardless of whether the answer is yes or no, the tribe should move forward to the last of three discussions. Behaviors, strategy in action. In the behaviors discussion, the tribe asks the question, what should we do to accomplish the outcomes? What does a tribe do that answered no to the first test question? This is the situation our friends at Explorati were in. In this case, write down the behaviors that will build the assets your tribe needs. One approach that might have worked for Ray's tribe was to take the existing talent to produce kick-ass multiplayer games and focus them on building something more saleable to the regular game publishers. These games wouldn't use improvisational computing, but the revenue from them could fund continued R&D until Explorati completed its breakthrough. With a temporary shift in strategy, Explorati might have survived, flourished, and still be the first to put improvisational computing on the map. In the end, the company simply ran out of cash. If your tribe answered yes to the first question, then it should get specific about the behaviors that will accomplish the outcomes. These outcomes need to be put in order of implementation, with each being specific. One of our clients, for example, has an IT strategy with the outcome to build a real-time web-based executive information system, EIS. The behaviors that flow from it are to 1. Locate the best 3 EIS installations, regardless of industry, by June 1st. 2. Complete a needs assessment of all business units by November 1st and present this to senior management by December 1st. And 3. Finish a tactical plan for implementation, including hiring or redeploying talent and maintaining funding for this initiative by December 15th. The process of writing down behaviors is deceptively simple, and people are in constant danger of making two classic mistakes. The first is writing down what people are already doing, rather than focusing on behaviors that will bring the outcomes to life. The conversation should be about what the members of the tribe will do to be successful. The second mistake is assuming that everything will go perfectly. It won't. Whenever practical, the strategy should include at least 2 behavioral paths to accomplish each critical outcome. When this 2-path model is too inefficient, it may be useful to start both paths and see which leads to the outcome first. This approach has been the basis for countless tribal victories in times of war. In World War II, for example, American military plans in the Pacific assumed that some battles would be lost. An effective behavior focuses people on covering ground quickly. When the unnecessary issues are set aside, it's remarkable how much progress people can make, even on outcomes that seem like major stretches. As the tribe puts these behaviors together, individual leaders will step forward. It's a lot like what ancient tribes did around a campfire, or in a cave sheltered from the storm. For the good of the tribe, a leader would say that his family, a subset of the tribe, would start a farm, and another person would step up to lead the hunt for game. Today, a person may say she will take the lead on financial models, and another will put together the PowerPoint deck for the CEO. The content of the conversation is different, but the process of tribal heroes stepping forward is the same. Once the tribe has recorded its behaviors, and the list seems complete, it's time for the last two questions. Test question number two. Enough assets for behaviors? Most often, the answer to this second question will be yes. If the answer is no, the tribe has two choices. First, it can add assets to the strategy. A good question to ask is, what assets do we have that we haven't identified yet? Second, the tribe can modify its behaviors so that they require fewer assets, often time, money, and people. A good question is there a faster, cheaper way to get this done? When the answer to the second test question is yes, the tribe can move on to the last question. Test question number three. Will behaviors accomplish outcomes? Here, the tribe looks at the behaviors from a critical eye. Will they work? In Explorati's case, and perhaps yours, if your tribe has an interim strategy, the question is, will the behaviors produce the missing assets, the interim outcome? Ray's version of this test question might have been, will our behaviors make enough money from kick-ass games without improvisational computing to fund our development efforts of this new technology? There's a danger in this third test question. The same tribe that developed the plan is now evaluating it. The we-can-do-anything euphoria that comes from these three strategic conversations may prevent a fair evaluation. To get around the problem, tribal leaders should ask every person in the tribe to answer this test question as if he were sitting on a jury. No one gets to abstain, and if someone thinks the behaviors will fail, she has to give details. It is vital that these contrarians be able to freely express their skepticism, but do not ask the naysayer for solutions. Doing so will make people feel that it is not safe to disagree with the rest of the tribe. Once all have expressed their thoughts, the tribe needs to take the concern or objection into account. The pitfall here is that members of the tribe may start attacking the person with the objection. To allow this is as critical a mistake as not asking the test questions at all. The tribal leader has to make sure the objection is heard and considered. She might ask another person to repeat it back until the naysayer is satisfied that the objection, concern, or point of view has been fully expressed. Only at this point should the tribe consider what to do about it, if anything. If the answer to this third question is a no, the solution is to ask the tribe what else it can do to achieve the outcome. Often, it is simply a matter of brainstorming a few more action steps, and then the answer rolls over to yes. At this point, the tribe has finished the interim outcome. The concern is now resolved, and the tribal focus returns to the original outcome. It produces a new list of behaviors utilizing its new assets to accomplish it. We saw this situation in a high-tech startup in 2001. Their interim outcome was to raise capital, but they lacked a patent on their core idea, and this missing asset was a concern to potential investors. To the credit of company executives, they stopped asking for money and concentrated all their efforts on obtaining the patent. A nerve-wracking process, as they were then burning through their meager reserves. Once they had done so, they went back to the original plan and found raising money much easier. Instead of denying the problem, they dealt with it via an interim strategy. This test question also guards against behaviors that are not relevant. One small biotech company we studied, a single tribe, set an outcome of advancing a line of drugs through phase 3 clinical trials by a certain date, yet its stated behaviors included recruiting benefits experts, erecting new buildings, and adding IT functionality. The small, impoverished research group would have gotten to phase 3 clinical tests eventually, but no thanks to the stated behaviors. The behaviors were off task to the outcome and therefore not relevant. The company floundered and eventually filed for bankruptcy. This test question forces the tribe to pick only behaviors that will accomplish its outcomes. Getting started with tribal strategy. Explorati had two strategic problems. Part of the tribe was at stage 2, and it was under-resourced, as most startups are. The tribal leadership approach would say to form an interim strategy right away and at the same time upgrade the tribe. Looking back, Ray notes that he hired the best people around, all with the right resumes. All were on board for the vision, but people weren't aligned on how to get there. He notes that if he had it to do over again, he would have hired people who were on board with the whole strategy, and he would have been more responsive to the concerns of team members. That's stage 4 thinking. Next time, we think he'll pull it off. Cascading strategies. The system of strategy in this chapter works at every level we've studied, from top corporate strategies through individual plans. The last question we need to address is, how do all of these strategies work together? The history of tribes shows a process of coordinated network strategies so that high-level behaviors flow down to the outcome of the next level. In the military, a general's behaviors become the outcomes for colonels, and their behaviors become the outcomes of captains, and so on. Amgen's top strategy included a behavior step of hiring and promoting people with the 8 Amgen values, and this flowed down to its own outcome within human resources. In tribes, unlike corporations of the 1950s, strategies also cascade up. People in direct communication with the customer, often at the bottom of hierarchies, are often in the best position to suggest top-tier strategies. Within the context of a stage 4 culture, every person, every group, and every department all have their own strategies, and these all interlock together. This feature of strategies that they network together and are interdependent becomes the basis for partnership. It's not that the top strategies are dependent on the strategies at the bottom. It's that all require one another, so without a culture of mutual accountability, part of a stage 4 culture, the system will underperform. Fulfilling the We're Great pledge. Griffin Hospital didn't move through these steps as systematically as we have presented them in this chapter. Yet their story shows the discipline of tribal strategy. As VP Bill Pawanda recounts it, in every business, profit is price times volume minus expenses. It doesn't matter if you're selling mayonnaise or selling cars. In a hospital, price and expenses are fixed by the managed healthcare system, so the only thing we had control over was volume. We looked into it and saw that volume was a function of patient satisfaction, and that meant we had to become a patient-centered facility, the outcome. We looked around and realized we didn't know how to do that. We were missing assets. So we went looking and found Plaintree, an interim outcome. They provided part of the answer, but we had a lot more work to do, behaviors. In just a few sentences, Pawanda summarized the method of a tribe coming together and setting its own strategy. And since it was the tribe's strategy, people were invested in it, both because of the strategy and in preparation for it. The culture became stage 4. As happened at Griffin, tribes need to respect the different dialects of outcomes, assets, and behaviors. Tribal leaders need to ensure that the tone of one discussion doesn't slop over into the next. Outcomes is all about measurement. Assets focuses on making a long and exacting list of everything the tribe can bring to bear on the strategy. Behaviors is much like a to-do list. For example, many tribes we observed after some basic training in this approach to strategy had lively discussions on assets, with people throwing out ideas faster than they could be written down. This same free-for-all spirit doesn't work well in a behaviors discussion, however, as it requires exactness of action. Once the tribe has set its strategy based on values and its noble cause, firmed up its outcomes, surveyed its assets, gotten specific about behaviors, and tested whether the three major parts connect, it will most often have a palpable sense of excitement. If the tribe was on the border between stages 3 and 4, this process usually pushes it over the top into "we're great." People will begin networking through triads to fulfill this dynamic, and they will actively bypass people who refuse to budge off stage 3 behavior. Every member of the tribe knows exactly how to succeed and what each person must do to make the tribe effective. That's the promise of tribal strategy. Key points from this chapter. A tribal strategy is nothing more than 3 separate but interlocking discussions, all flowing from values and a noble cause. In outcomes, answer the question, what do we want? In assets, answer the question, what do we have? Before moving on to behaviors, ask the first test question, do we have enough assets for the outcomes? If the answer is yes, move on. If the answer is no, construct an interim strategy. In behaviors, answer the question, what will we do? Ask the second test question, do we have enough assets for our behaviors? If the answer is yes, move on. If the answer is no, add more assets or revise behaviors. Ask the third test question, will the behaviors produce the outcomes? If the answer is yes, you have a strategy. If the answer is no, add more behaviors, making sure you're leveraging all available assets. Once you have a strategy, focus only on the behaviors. Restrategize every 90 days. Leverage points for a person at stage 4. Stabilize her at stage 4 by ensuring her relationships are based on values and mutual self-interest of current projects. Encourage her to form more triads, the subject of Chapter 10. Encourage her to use the strategy process in Chapter 11 with her team. In particular, encourage her to run sessions that explore the team's core values, its sense of noble cause, outcomes that will inspire the team, its assets, and then its behavior. Who would do what? In short, encourage her to pick projects that are more of a stretch and that accomplish bigger and bigger results by working more in partnership with other people. Once she is fully stable at stage 4, which you can measure by her use of "we're great" language and her network triads of relationships, encourage her team to take advantage of market conditions to make history. If the market doesn't offer the right conditions, engineer an opportunity. Recruit others to the tribe who share the values of the group's strategy. When the team hits difficulties, point people to others for solutions. Encourage her to not solve problems, as doing so is consistent with "I'm great and you're not." Perform regular oil changes with the team. In this process, she should lead a discussion about 1. What is working well, 2. What is not working well, and 3. what the team can do to make the things that are not working well work. Success indicators. She will use "life is great" language rather than "we're great and they're not." She will seek out ever more challenging projects, and her network will include an almost stunning amount of diversity, but mostly people who, like her, have owned and then left stage 3. She will make decisions about how to spend her time based on the tribe's core values and noble cause. She will appear to be an embodiment of the tribe's strategy, especially its values. Part 4. Toward Vital Work. Communities, Stage 5. Chapter 12. Early Stage 5. Life is Great. Gordon Binder, former CEO of biotechnology giant Amgen, didn't know it at the time, but his company delayed publication of this book for almost 5 years. In the early 1990s, we only knew about tribal stages 1 through 4, and we had lots of examples of each. On the basis of our observations, we believe that Stage 4's "We're Great" language was the top of the mountain. Then, thanks to Amgen, everything turned upside down, delaying the publication of this book. The discovery was worth the wait. We expected Amgen to demonstrate a cultural mood of tribal pride, a hallmark of Stage 4, with people congratulating one another for a job well done. Profits and revenues were up, and employees were making a lot of money off options. We expected a tribal vibe, not unlike the end of the movie Rudy, with thousands of Notre Dame fans going nuts with joy over the victory. We walked into Amgen in the 1990s and asked who their competitors were. We expected Genentech, another biotechnology firm, or maybe, if people were ambitious, Pfizer, a fully integrated pharmaceutical company. It was even possible that people would be so ill-informed about the marketplace that they wouldn't know. All of those answers would be consistent with what we expected to find, and they would help verify our hypotheses and make us happy researchers. "We're in competition with cancer," we heard from Amgen employees. "Huh? No mention of a company?" The same people went on to say, "Maybe our competitor is inflammatory disease, such as arthritis, obesity, Parkinson's." We weren't happy. In fact, our four-stage model couldn't explain what we were hearing. One person added, "We might be in competition with untimely death, human disease. I guess we're not really targeting starvation or war." Again, our reaction was, "Huh." To make our situation worse, we didn't see any evidence of tribal pride. No high fives, no "we're number one" banners, which they were, in growth, although not in revenue or market capitalization. "It's amazing," one person in engineering told us. "A few good experiments and now we're sitting on billion-dollar patents. It makes me think of all the human diseases we'll beat in the next few years." His tone was what perplexed us more than his words. It wasn't pride. It was almost a whisper, said like a prayer of thanksgiving. It's a mood we came to call innocent wonderment. We had stumbled across our first example of Stage 5, and it was as much a leap forward as Stage 4 was from 3. It is, we believe, the future of business. At Amgen in the 1990s, and in most other organizations at this stage, the culture oscillated in and out of Stage 5. After a burst of history-making activity, the group fell back to the "we're great" language of Stage 4, assessing their performance relative to competitors. Then another market opportunity, or possible discovery, would come along and catapult them back into Stage 5 again. If we graphed out the Amgen of the early 1990s, the culture would be like waves on the beach, the crests in stage 5, and the troughs in stage 4. Stage 5. Stage 5 accounts for just under 2% of workplace cultures. It's marked by life is great language, devoid of any competitor. It's not that competitors don't exist. It's that they don't matter. Values which are important at stage 4 are vital, a word literally meaning life-giving. Without them, the tribal culture would collapse to 4 and keep falling. A noble cause, critical at stage 4, is the group's only compass. Without another tribe to study and beat, renewing life was Amgen's only direction, and values were its only way to know who they were. At stage 4, tribes know who they are by their competitor. Since Amgen, we found dozens of organizations with stage 5 tribes. Some are for-profit companies like Amgen, others are not-for-profits, some local boys and girls clubs, several think tanks, and a few wildly successful technology startups. What they all have in common is tribal leadership taken to its next level, and a level of performance that makes history. Not-for-profit organizations have an advantage in seeing beyond the competition and aligning themselves on a noble cause. Mindy Watrous, CEO of Colorado Special Olympics, said, "These people, the staff, support anyone. They make me better. They elevate people within the organization and elevate the athletes. They celebrate everyone." The noble cause of the Special Olympics is creating opportunities for all athletes. They believe they are making history every time athletes compete. People who have ever been part of a Stage 5 tribe, or even seen one at work, often describe it in the same tone of reverence and gratitude they use to tell stories of their kids. All things being equal, Stage 5 will always outperform Stage 4. At Amgen, the focus was on curing disease. Making money wasn't the goal, and rewarding investors didn't motivate this group. That said, Amgen was making money, with analysts at the time saying that the company had a license to print money. Fortune picked Amgen as one of just a handful of companies that had made investors truly wealthy. The purpose of this chapter is to pass along what we know about early stage 5, how it works, and what tribal leaders can do to elevate their companies to this zone of peak performance. Graduation from Stage 4. Jim Clifton, the CEO of the Gallup organization, is a tribal leader on steroids. Over the years, people have called Gallup a cult, our detractors, I mean. But I have always considered that a great compliment. In fact, Clifton has long referred to the organization he heads as a tribe. He explains, "We have a lot of common values in our organization that remind me of a tribe." Clifton formerly ran Selection Research Incorporated, SRI, a marketing research company that conducted structured psychological interviews to identify individuals who would fit a designated position in an organization. The SRI brand wasn't well known, and the group searched for a way to make a global impact. It needed something more. Something more turned out to be Gallup. The organization started by Dr. George Gallup in 1935, originally called the American Institute of Public Opinion. Clifton explains, "We, at SRI, worked hard to acquire Gallup from the family because people latch on to symbols. When we were at SRI, we couldn't develop global pride until we had a global symbol. We don't wear it like pro teams, but here at Gallup, we wear a lot of label clothes." With the world-famous name and organization part of the tribe, everything began to change. It's important to note that acquiring Gallup wasn't the ultimate goal, but rather an interim strategy, as described in the previous chapter. With the resources of both SRI and Gallup, now under one name, Clifton moved the organization in a new direction, establishing the Gallup Path, a model that ties individual contribution to the organization's bottom-line performance. Under his tribal leadership, Gallup moved the group more toward consulting. All that work set the stage for the organization's jump to Stage 5. We developed a belief based on our research of 300,000 people that a person's strengths are at the very base of it all. We believe any individual can be extremely valuable or even has a shot at being a world leader if they will pull it off using their own strengths instead of trying to become a Jack Welch or a Ted Turner. Clifton argues, the core value we heard in his statement is potential, and everything the organization has done is based on unlocking it in individuals, clients, and even the entire world. Furthermore, the Gallup tribe has developed research and procedures to assess and develop this potential, basing such efforts on natural ability. Although Clifton had not seen the strategy model in Chapter 11, he already had a noble cause, a set of core values, and core assets, research abilities, global brand, and research on unlocking potential. In addition, Clifton saw the value in the tribal culture. The kind of people we attract to our organization are the kind of people who are driven by mission and purpose. That sets our tribe apart. When we explained our research on tribes and the five cultures, he added, many of our activities are at Stage 5, but it wasn't always that way. He said, we ask the question, are we helping 6 billion people or just the best corporations in the world? The honest answer was that we were helping the best corporations and schools and universities, Clifton said. We weren't doing much for the 6 billion people. From our research, companies that are engrossed in warfare with a competitor don't consider questions like the one Gallup asked. They are generally focused on winning market share and new customers, and thwarting the rival at the same time. At best, an early Stage 4 We're Great culture develops, focused on beating that competitor. Gallup had owned Stage 4 and was ready to move on. As a result, it could recognize the insufficiency of the Stage 4 culture. In a sense, the group had a realization that is a more advanced version of the epiphany to tribal leadership, the subject of Chapter 7. The result was a new appreciation for their ability to contribute to global concerns, an all-inclusive view. Gallup sets its new noble cause as improving the well-being of our clients' organizations and improving the lives of the 6 billion people on the earth. The group didn't let go of its competitive edge, but the drive to win lost its sense of a competitor. No one has to lose in the service of 6 billion people. One of the outcomes the organization set is a world poll, which, according to Clifton, represents 97% of the world's population. For the first time in history, the world will speak with a single voice, thanks to Gallup building on its values and strengths in research. Furthermore, the research will reveal what Clifton calls the soul of over 100 individual countries. Nobel laureate Daniel Kahneman, who works with Clifton and has a reputation for honesty, told us, the Gallup organization is unlike anything I have seen. In some ways, the way their culture emphasizes the positive is relentless. The true positivity of their culture permeates everything. Stage 5 tribes use all the subtleties of chapters 9, 10, and 11. Although Clifton hadn't read our work or seen the strategy model, What he volunteered about Gallup showed all the elements: a noble cause, a set of shared core values, an outcome, the global poll, core assets, research abilities, a global brand, top talent, a highly nimble and networked tribe, and behaviors. The steps people would take to conduct and popularize the world poll. His description of the company's culture included triads, and Gallup works with clients as partners. Note that once a tribe establishes stability at stage 4, it can either take advantage of a market opportunity or engineer such an event, as Gallup did with its world poll, to pop into stage 5. Coaching tip. Bring together the tribe and ask the following question: what would propel us to the next level? One way we've found that sometimes works is to think of adding assets on the big deal scale, which we abbreviate BDS. The question is, what asset would be a 1 or 2 out of 10 on the BDS, a 5, an 8, a 10? Moving to stage 5 becomes real when a group commits to a strategy, usually with several interim strategies to build its assets, that they think is beyond them and beyond any competitor, that would have an impact on the entire world. Moment of transcending stage 4. Stage 5 tribes often describe a moment when they transcended the "we're great" culture and emerged somewhere else, in a culture so different that many didn't have the words to describe it. Mike Ruzione, captain of the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team, encountered Stage 5 when his team beat the Soviet Union. His story starts with the prerequisites of Stage 4. He describes the people he played with. There were 20 players on this team, and 19 of them were captains at some time. He named the people, referring to high school or college teams. Ruzione was a captain among captains. Despite some press to the contrary, the coach was not loved by the team. "It was always us against him. As Coach Herb Brooks used to say, there was a method to his madness, and we always tried to figure out what that method was, and when it was done, we all said, 'Wow, he was right. He helped orchestrate it. He helped plan. He knew he had the type of players we were.'" Ruzione's tone toward his old coach never changed. "I can remember 10 years ago, the phone rang, and my wife told me it was Herb, and I thought, 'Oh my God, he's going to yell at me. I have 3 kids running around the house, and I'm worried that Herb is mad at me. It's crazy.'" The coach of the famous team has since died, but his method is now clear to Ruzione. "Herb didn't care if we liked him. He cared about our respecting him. We never saw Herb off the ice. He did what he did and left us alone." Off the ice, players often grumbled about his tactics, including his relentless practice sessions. The culture became stage 4. We're great, and Herb's not. A rare case wherein the enemy of a group is a single person. The stage was set. Players knew their roles, had the talent, and knew one another by their values, not just their abilities. They had put in the time and effort. As with Amgen and Gallup, all the pieces were in place. The 1980 U.S. team was stable at stage 4, waiting for the right opportunity to move to stage 5. The team's time came in the game with the Soviets, when Herb told the team it would all come together. What they didn't realize was that he was giving them the stage and their opportunity to become the team he knew they could be. In that moment, the U.S. Olympic hockey team took a quantum leap. They jumped from a successful Stage 4 tribe and became something more, playing not against Herb or a competitor, but for something much bigger. They played for the love of the sport, for themselves, and for all the old-fashioned values that united them. It was a moment when everything came together, and the sense of wonder didn't set in until the game was over. Eruzione told us, the countdown, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The puck could have gone in, everything could have changed so quickly. So then, when the buzzer sounded? We asked him about his mood at that moment. The first thought I had was, wow. He said it to us in a whisper, very much like the people at Amgen in describing clinical breakthroughs. His tone conveyed the sense that people had done the impossible. It wasn't about beating the Russians, stage 4. It was about doing what people thought could not be done, stage 5. The next scene was not tribal pride, but innocent wonderment, overwhelmed with gratitude. We went back into the locker room and guys were hugging and crying. We just couldn't believe it, Eruzione told us. In that game, the group transcended its self-imposed barriers and emerged as a fully functional Stage 5 tribe, guided only by its values and its noble cause. In doing so, it shocked everyone, even itself. The word miracle has become associated with the 1980 victory. It's also a word we heard again and again from organizations that were operating with a Stage 5 culture. We interviewed one corporate team that had been contacted by the White House to join a summit with then-President Bill Clinton. It was a miracle, someone like me meeting a U.S. president, the team leader said. We heard the word at Amgen in reference to their clinical breakthroughs and to their always seeming to be one step ahead of the competition. Our view is that the emergence of Stage 5 feels so unfamiliar to most of us that we go to religious or spiritual language in describing it. Wow, was what we heard when we talked with people who were part of the Apollo missions in the 1960s, leading to the first manned mission to the moon. The mood was the same, despite the tribe members' scientific orientation and the years of preparation. We couldn't believe it, we heard from people now long retired. It just didn't seem possible. And many times, wow. At this point, groups often stop us. What if it's not real? People ask. In the early 2000s, we collected data from other